The Ghostlight Theater proudly presents our own original adaptation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Hello, dearest friends, family, and I'm sure some first-time listeners. This is the first full cast production to be showcased in the shadows of this dimly lit stage, here inside the Theater of the Afterlife. So, I wish you a wintry yet warm welcome to friends new and old. Good evening, good people. Thank you for joining us on this bleak midwinter's night. This is your ethereal actor and host, Lucius W. Griot. Here to wish you all happy and haunting holidays. A happy Kwanzaa, a happy Hanukkah, happy winter solstice, Feliz Navidad, and Merry Christmas, or perhaps I should say Happy Christmas, as that would be most appropriate, considering the setting of our classic story on this night. Charles John Huffman Dickens is incredibly well known the world over for his written works of art. Incredibly fitting for a charter member of London, England's Ghost Club, of which Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was also a noteworthy member. Perhaps Mr. Dickens' most notable works are his ghost stories, our favorites. Which brings me to one such legend in particular. The one that I, accompanied by some of my most dramatic spectral associates, will attempt to resurrect for you this icy evening. You could call us Christmas spirits. Not too unlike the ones featured in tonight's holiday production of A Christmas Carol. There are believed to be over 100 different adaptations of this literary classic. From plays to musicals to films, one of the latter such examples, I am to understand even features a particularly dazzling performance by a certain green frog with an affinity toward banjos and rainbows. Yes? Well, I think that just stands to prove the reach of this particular tale. That being said, featured in tonight's cast are the voice talents of Scott Wichman as Ebenezer Scrooge, William Cardozo as Bob Cratchit, Darren M. Johnson as Jacob Marley, Tess Kay as Mrs. Cratchit, Catherine Gardner as Martha Cratchit, Charlotte Kulak as Tiny Tim Cratchit, A.J. White as Fred, Zoe Dean as Belle, Amber Faye Armstrong as Fan, Abigail Carter as the Ghost of Christmas Past, Maria Lopresti as the Ghost of Christmas Present, and Dana Noel with a particularly awe-inspiring performance as the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And last, but assuredly far, far, far from least, we have our narrators, Trinity Pearson and Grace Robinson. I will turn over the proverbial reins to them now, and I'll catch up with you all in a bit. Please enjoy the GLT's production of A Christmas Carol. In prose, being a ghost story of Christmas, but more commonly referred to as simply
A Christmas Carol.
Marley was dead to begin with. There's no doubt whatsoever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner.
Ebenezer Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good upon the exchange for anything he chose to put his hand to. Yes, Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead.
Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for, I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, sole administrator, friend, and sole mourner.
And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event. Oh, he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, was Scrooge.
Squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, secret and self-contained and as solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, made his eyes red, and his thin lips blue as he spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. And once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve,
old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. Scrooge and Marley's was a grim, cheerless place if ever there was one. Scrooge never painted out Marley's name. So there it stood, years afterwards above the door, Scrooge and Marley. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open so that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, Bob Cratchit, who sat cold in a dismal little cell beyond, writing in his ledger. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked to be survived by merely only one coal.
And he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room.
So the clerk put on his overcoat and tried to warm himself by way of the candle perched atop his desk. Its sole purpose was to illuminate the work set before him, and this was evident when his efforts proved fruitless.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay, that Jesus Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day.
Cratchit!
Yes, Mr. Scrooge.
Stop that infernal caterwauling.
Yes, sir. Apologies, Mr. Scrooge.
Singing their idiotic Christmas carols at my very door. Go on! Get away from my door! Go somewhere else and belly your blasted carols, or I'll...
Why, Governor, it's an old custom at Christmas time, you know?
Yes. And I don't want any of your old customs. Take your fellow fools and go away! Christmas. Bah!
Right, sir. Well, happy Christmas anyway, sir.
Now... You get that letter from Higgins and Blackthorne, Cratchit, and then I want you to finish posting this ledger. And after that, you can pop over to Parthingill's and tell Ephraim Parthingill you've come for the 17 shillings and sixpence he's owed me since September. Tell him I shall have a constable over there if he doesn't pay up at once.
But Mr. Parthingill's wife has been ill, sir.
Oh, what do I care about his wife? I want my 17 and six.
I will. I just thought it being Christmas, sir.
Christmas? Christmas? You mention that word to me once more, Bob Cratchit, and I'll...
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Mr. Fred.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Bob.
Bah! Humbug.
Christmas? A humbug? Uncle, now you don't mean that, I'm sure.
I mean just that. Exactly that. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you? You're poor enough.
Come then, what right or reason do you have to be so dismal? You're rich enough.
Humbug.
Oh, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? What's Christmas to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle.
Nephew. Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. What do you want from me?
I simply came to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Bah! Merry Christmas. Much good may it do you. Much good it has ever done you.
Well, there are many things for which I derive good by which I have not profited, I dare say. Christmas among the rest. But I have always thought of Christmas time as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in a long calendar year where people seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely. And to think of others, especially those below their own station, as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave. And not another race of creatures bound on their own journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good. And it will do me good. And to that I say, God bless it.
Let me hear another sound from you, Bob Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation. You're quite a powerful speaker, nephew. It's a wonder you don't go into Parliament. You talk enough nonsense.
Oh, don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
I'll see you in hell first.
But why, Uncle? Why?
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love. Good afternoon.
He never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason to not come now?
Good afternoon, I said.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing from you. Why can't we be friends?
Good afternoon.
Well, I am sorry to find you so resolute. But I have made the trial an homage to Christmas. And I shall keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, again, I say, Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Bob, and the missus, and to Tiny Tim.
Thank you, Mr. Fred. Same to you, sir. Good day.
Good day, Bob.
Nonsense. Twaddle. Flummery. My clerk talking of Christmas without even 2 sixpence to jingle together in his trouser pocket. I'll retire to Bedlam. Hey, you there, Bob Cratchit. Come here. What are you doing there?
I'm only putting a bit more coal in the fire, Mr. Scrooge. It's so cold in there, sir.
You put that coal back into the scuttle. A fire. A fire, indeed. I'll tell you what, if you use coal at that rate, you and I will soon be parting company, Mr. Cratchit. You understand that? As many a young fellow who'd like your situation, you know.
I'm sorry, sir. My fingers were getting a little stiff with the cold.
Then put on your mittens. Well, go on, see who it is.
Yes, sir.
A gentleman and a lady enter, cradling books and papers in their arms. Both greet the clerk with all the warmth that the season itself may have lacked, but the holiday embraced. The former removed his hat and brushed the snow from his shoulders, but it was the latter of the pair that caught Scrooge's eye. As he regarded her, he experienced a wave of recognition shoot through his old bones. It was a face that he had not seen in many years.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir, and good afternoon, ma'am.
My name is Fan. And this is my associate, Nathaniel. This is Scrooge and Marley's, I believe.
Indeed, it is.
We should like to see the head of the firm, if we may.
Oh, yes. Very good. Right this way.
Ah, good day, sir. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night.
How awful.
Truly. Though, we have no doubt that his generosity is well represented by his surviving partner. So, Mr. Scrooge, at this festive season of the year, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and the destitute who suffer greatly at this present time. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons, sir.
And the workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are.
I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
Ah, well, I'm very glad to hear it. I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course.
No, sir. All the institutions you mentioned are flourishing.
But it's only fitting that we, who are more fortunate, should endeavor to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when what is keenly felt in abundance rejoices.
With that final word, she placed her hand on Scrooge's arm and gently squeezed, in the very same way that another from Ebenezer's past had done on a fair number of occasions, particularly when he was upset, or when the situation called for appealing to his deepest sensibilities. Scrooge recognized the long, unopened, pure, kind eyes of his little sister Fan, gazing into his own.
What shall we put you down for?
Scrooge remained motionless, yet simultaneously moved, more than he had been in many a year, but staring into her eyes, doubt grew from the frost that had grown and hardened Scrooge's heart over the years, and almost in an instant, he was thrust back to the reality that he did not recognize the woman that stood before him. He jerked his arm out of her grasp and answered,
"Nothing."
"You mean that you wish to remain anonymous, sir?"
"I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough. Those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there. Many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, I only have your word for it that all this is so.
It's the truth, Mr. Scrooge.
It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with others. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon to you both.
I quite understand, Mr. Scrooge. Good afternoon.
Well, is there anything else I may help you with? Something that doesn't involve you attempting to pry open my wallet?
No. But I might help you, Ebenezer.
Excuse me. I couldn't help overhearing, but I should like to contribute twopence.
Cratchit.
Yes, sir. It isn't much. It's all I can afford, but there are others in worse situations than even I.
You're a kind and generous fellow, Mr. Cratchit.
I wish I might say the same of your employer.
Cratchit.
Yes, sir. I'll be there straight away.
We'd better go. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Cratchit.
Merry Christmas, Bob.
Merry Christmas, madam. Wait. How did you...
Cratchit! Close that door!
Oh, yes, sir!
Come here, Cratchit.
Yes, sir. Sir?
It's too late to have you go to Parthingale. It'll be closed up for Christmas like these other fools. We may as well close up the place now. You'll want the entire day tomorrow, I suppose?
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown of your wages for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, yes?
Well, sir, I...
And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work?
It's only once a year, Mr. Scrooge.
Your poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning, understand?
Oh, I will, sir. I will indeed. Good night, sir. And Merry Christmas.
Bah. Humbug.
The office was closed in a twinkling, and Bob Cratchit, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling below his waist, for he boasted no great coat, went down a slide on Cornhill 20 times in honor of its being Christmas Eve. He then ran home to Camden Town as swiftly as he could to play with his family a game of blind man's bluff.
Scrooge, on the other hand, took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, having read all the newspapers and spent the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went to his drab house. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, had to grope with his hands through the fog and the frost to find the door.
Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it, night and morning, during his whole residence in the place. It should also be said that, as is the way with most individuals as they grow older, Scrooge had little in the way of imagination carried from his childhood. Nor had he given a second thought to the memory of his deceased partner, since he was last mentioned him earlier that afternoon. So then, what could be the explanation as to why, when Scrooge inserted his key into the lock of the door, is it that Scrooge saw the face of Jacob Marley where the knocker would normally be?
Marley's face had a grim, muddy, pale blue light about it. It was not angry or ferocious, but looked at Scrooge just as Marley used to, with the addition of ghostly spectacles turned up on its forehead. The hair was curiously stirred, as if by breath or hot air from some indeterminable source, and though the eyes were wide open, they were perfectly motionless. That and its livid color made it horrible, but its horror seemed to be in spite of the face and beyond its control rather than a part of its own expression. As Scrooge stared in disbelief, his eyes fixed on this phenomenon, all at once, it became a knocker again.
To say that he was not startled, or that his very blood had not turned near ice, causing shivers to spread throughout his entirety of his body, would be quite untrue. He cautiously put his hand upon the key he had relinquished, turned it sturdily, walked in, and lit a nearby candle.
He did pause with a moment's irresolution before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind at first, as if he half expected to be terrified with the sight of Marley's whole form standing in the hall. But there was nothing on the back of the door. Nothing except the screws and nuts that held the knocker on. So he said,
"Bah!"
and closed it with a bang.
The sound resounded through the house like thunder, though Scrooge was not a man to be frightened by echoes. He fastened the door, walked across the hall, and up the broad staircase. Once he reached the landing, Scrooge walked through each of his rooms to see that all was right. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double-locked himself in, which was not his usual custom. He took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his gruel.
What is that?
A disused bell, which hung in the room for some now forgotten purpose, was beginning to sway so softly that it scarcely made a sound. However, soon it grew more violent and rang loudly, and it was subsequently accompanied by every other bell within the house. This might have lasted half a minute, or a minute, but it seemed an hour. The bells ceased as they had begun together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise, deep down below.
Someone's in the wine cellar, but the door's locked and double locked.
Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were set to drag chains. Just then, the cellar door flew open with a booming sound. Then he heard the noise louder, ascending from the staircase.
Something is coming closer. It's outside my door. Oh, I won't believe it. It's humbug still.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge.
What do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
You're quite particular for a ghost. All right, then. Who were you, then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
The same face, the very same. Marley in his usual waistcoat, tights, and boots. The chain he drew was clasped around his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail. It was adorned with cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent so that Scrooge, observing him and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat behind him. Though he looked the phantom through and through and saw it standing before him, though he felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes and marked the very texture of the folded kerchief bound about his head and chin, he was still incredulous and fought against his senses.
Jacob Marley, can you sit down?
I can.
Do it, then.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your senses?
I don't know.
Why do you doubt your own senses?
Because any little thing can affect them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a mere fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than a grave about you, whatever you are. Mercy! Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me? or not?
I do. I do. I must. But why? Why do spirits walk the earth and why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellows and travel far and wide. If that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander the world to witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth.
Tell me, Jacob, what is that chain you wear around you?
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I fashioned it and fastened it, both of my own free will. Is it padded church to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as full, as heavy, as long as mine, 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on yours since. Oh, it is a ponderous chain, Ebenezer.
Jacob, please. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. It comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. Nor can I tell you what I would. Very little else is permitted to me. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger. My spirit never walked beyond the counting house. My spirit never roamed beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing home. And where the journey still lies before me.
7 years dead and traveling all the time.
The whole time. On the wings of the wind.
You must have covered a great bit of ground.
Captain, bound to double iron. Not to know that no space of regret can make amends for one's life's opportunity misused. Yet such was I. Oh, such was I.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business? Mankind was my business. Charity, mercy, benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. At this time of year, I suffer the most. Why did I walk through the crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down, never raising them to that blessed star which led the wise men to a poor abode? Were there no poor homes to which its light would have conducted me?
Jacob, I...
Hear me, Ebenezer. My time is nearly gone.
I will! But don't be hard upon me, Jacob.
How it is that I appear before you, a shape that you can see, I may not tell. For I have sat invisible beside you many a day.
Oh, you have?
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. Do you hear that, Ebenezer?
Yes. Yes, Jacob, I do. I do hear it. You always were a good friend to me, Jacob. Thank you.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob?
It is.
Well, I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
Oh, couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more. And look that for your own sake. You remember what has passed between us.
Scrooge's supernatural visitor stood and walked backward from him toward the window as it raised slowly in response. Scrooge could hear incoherent sounds of lamentation and regret, inexpressibly sorrowful wailings. The specter listened for a moment, then joined in the mournful dirge and floated out upon the bleak, dark night. Scrooge followed to the window and looked out. The air was filled with phantoms wandering hither and thither in restless haste, moaning as they went. Like Marley's ghost, they were all clad in chains, and it was evident that the misery with them all was that they sought to interfere for good in human matters, but had lost the power forever.
Now, whether these haunting visions faded into mist or mist enshrouded them, Scrooge couldn't tell, but they and their voices faded together. He closed the window, and as he did so, he was overtaken by a sudden feeling of drowsiness. He stumbled to his bed, and the moment upon which he made contact with the mattress, he was fast asleep.
Well, hello. We meet again. Well, folks, I'm sure I can speak on behalf of the cast when I say we sincerely hope you've enjoyed part one of this special holiday production. Be sure to tune in this weekend for the exciting conclusion in part two of the Ghostlight Theater's production of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. May your holidays be bright. May your food be sumptuous. And may your heart be light. That way, you can keep the light on for us. Merry Christmas and happy holidays, folks. Merry Christmas and happy holidays, my dear friends.